Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, we'd like to welcome our listening audience today to Africa on the Move. That's right, Africa is on the move. And if you don't move, we're going to move you. Today, we're going to basically open up our phone lines. We'd like to have just open discussions on concerns and issues that are going on in your community. As we often say, what's going on in the next of your woods and beyond? That's the thing. What's going on in the next of your woods and beyond? There seem to be so many things going on within our community, and unfortunately are not being told by the so-called established media. Then it becomes upon the people to create the people media where we can communicate with our sisters and brothers. And this is in this light tonight what this program is dedicated to. We'd like to open our lines up to our listening audience and have people call in to just give us an update of what's going on in the neck of their woods. Our number is 323-679-0841. 323-679-0841. Call us. Let us know what is going on. As Marvin gave us here, what is going on. So we're going to open it up right now with our brother Haki. He has some things he maybe would like to share with us. And we'd like to know what's going on in Nick of his woods and beyond. What are some of the things you think the people need to know or hear? Brother Haki, come and talk to our audience on Africa on the Move. What's going on?
Well, in the Virginia per se, there's so much going on. It's particularly hard to pinpoint, a lot of the problems. But I'll tell you one of the things is first and foremost on my mind is a question around the baby who penis was allegedly accidentally cut off, you know, by the doctors down in Memphis, Tennessee. That's something that's been foremost on my mind. I think that it's sort of symbolic of the terms of the kind of conditions that our people, you know, are privy to in society, in terms of the lack of respect, the disrepute that the system holds our people in. So I think that given these kind of conditions, it seems to me that it's a wake up call for African people in society to begin to understand just how perilous our situation is, you know, here in the United States. And I'm just hoping that, people get more involved with that situation and begin to understand the immediate implications for the community and begin to organize the kind of things we need in terms of our longevity in society.
Okay. We can come back to that point. We can go to our next person. We have 7075. Brother Hefty, talk to us. What's going on in the neck of your woods?
Okay, in addition to what Brother Haki had just mentioned, another concern that comes to my mind is an incident of a brother who was held in prison for 3 years but never charged with anything. And he was held in prison in New York, in Rikers Island, for 3 years because his family could not bail him out of prison. And it turns out the charge of robbery was dropped, but he had already served 3 years in prison without being charged, and he endured all types of brutality and torture during the time he was in prison, and that indicates to me that people do not care about the rights of Africans in this society and worldwide. And I think it speaks to a much larger problem, which we'll probably get into as things develop.
I see we have a call on the line just came on. We have a call. We can identify your last four numbers. Basically come in, take your name, and let us know what's going on in Nick of your woods. We have a caller, caller 3330. Caller 3330. What's going on in Nick of your woods and beyond? Talk to us. Yes, caller? Caller 3330. Would you like to share what's going on in Nick of your wood? Okay, guess our callers don't want to talk right now. So what we're going to do is go back to Brother Haki in terms of one of the things he raised with us earlier about the baby who penis he was castrated. And Memphis, Tennessee, and one of the things about that particular event, Brother Haki, I understand that one of the things that the U.S. laws is doing now, it seems to be protecting the criminals who commit malpractice acts and make it very difficult for you to be charged and be compensated. I've heard the lawyer the other day was speaking on that particular case, and he was talking about all the red tape that they have to go through just before they, just the process itself alone before you can attempt to start investigating the wrongs that people have committed. And even in the process of doing that, we also understand that the mother cannot be compensated in no shape or form. Any kind of damages that may be awarded will only go to the kids. But what I want to ask you, Brother Haki, in terms of how do we really deal with this whole question of the rules and laws that have been put in place, not just in this case, but in general, that seem to be protecting the wealth, those who have money, and particularly those who are committing these kind of crimes. How do we address that as it relates to laws? At what point in time should we begin to say, you know, these laws have no legitimacy and not to respect them?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely correct. At what point, at least there was the illusion in terms of, you know, being concerned about the masses of people, where they actually try to implement real democracy, where it was egalitarianism, where it was the greatest good for the greatest number of people. That reality has long slipped away, and then people have to understand, and to be very clear on this point. When we talk about fascism in America, we've got to be very clear on this point. It's not just, that's just something to say to hype, you know the situation in this country. We have to really look at this whole concept in terms of fascism, and we have to look at it in an unending amount of control that corporations wield in a society. One of the things that we can't realistically expect corporations to give a damn about human beings, about human suffering, or justice. Those kind of variables are anathema to a capitalist system, and so therefore, particularly in the corporate context. So corporate entities have no respect for anything that takes away from the bottom line. To respect people, to employ people, to help shelter, those are things that corporations are in the exact opposition to, because those things doesn't pay at the bottom line of corporate America. And as such, because corporate Americans wield such enormous amount of power in the society, we have to understand that the worth of the human being is no worth, which means that situations like we have the baby penis cut off, as opposed to being outraged by this kind of thing happening, corporate Americans tend to circle the wagon. Now, the thing is that what is the role of the government, you know, in terms of these kind of atrocities happen? Well, in the context of fascism, government has no role in terms of that. In fact, all laws, all policies are dictated by corporate America. And because corporate America dictates the policies in respect to this country, then we have, within the level of injustice, the level of suffering, and the level of injustice has exponentially grown. And so we have to understand that. And so we shouldn't elude ourselves into believing that we have simply appealed to the government in terms of trying to redress these problems the African community face. The reality is that we have to do that. It takes organization. It's going to take organization, and there has to be a fight. I mean, people have to organize, you have to take on these powerful entities, you know, but you have to do this. Now, in terms of how you take them on, it's across the board. But the thing is that you have to have these organizations in place to challenge, you know, if nothing more than to bring clarity, you know, to the situation that people are confronted with. But the bottom line is that it's going to be work. And I think my position is that we have to see our condition in this society as precarious. Our situation is very precarious, and we have to understand that. And because our situation is so precarious, then we have to be willing to take a stand. And I mean, there are no shortcuts. It's not an easy way. It doesn't lead to solutions. But we have to understand the nature of the beast. And unfortunately, too many of us do not understand the nature of the beast. And so therefore, we acquiesce, thinking that somehow we just appear to your government officials that it's going to be all right. Never taking into consideration that government doesn't rule us. This is ruled by corporate America. And so therefore, these kind of atrocities, these kind of injustices will continue to proliferate as time go on, and we have to take a stand. We don't have a choice.
Okay. Brother Anthony, anything you'd like to respond to what Brother Haki just stated before we move on to a issue I would like for you to address? We basically would like to have a dialogue. One of the things we like to do on this show, Africa on the Move, is even with our participants, you know, we can, you know, dialogue with each other. So I don't want to be like a one-way conversation. I ask the questions and you give a response. So if you have anything you'd like to contribute to it, please feel free to shine in on it. And we'd like to let our listening audience know that this is an open topic today. We're speaking on what's going on in Nicaragua Woods, and the phone line is open. We encourage you to call 323-679-0841. 323-679-0841. I know there are a host of things that are going on, and because the mass media has interest in not sharing these things with you, then become important for the people to create their own media. And this is one thing that Africa on the Move is trying to do, is to become a voice, as Brother Mumia Abu-Jamal was saying, for the voiceless. So on that note, Brother Anthony, in terms of the case of the young man who was unjustly locked up for 3 years and he didn't commit no crime, we have a young lady that we had a chance to meet 7 weeks ago from Louisiana, Ms. Linda Brown. We were trying and waiting for her to call in. If not, she'd be on one of our shows. And one of the things I found out talking with her down in her state in Louisiana is that they are just literally just picking up African people and locking them up for no reason, just picking them up and putting them in jail. And no one's saying nothing about it. Now, given the fact that this is a climate now with the industrialized prison system is now getting towards making privatized prisons, where judges and prosecutors, who are the owners of these prisons, that we come to find out, they own these prisons and they're making millions and millions of dollars. The question becomes, how do we stop this pipeline for our people continue to go in this pipeline? And how can such outrageous acts be committed against so-called U.S. citizens and nothing said about it? What is the basis for this? Given the fact that we have an African president in power. Yeah, African people wanted to attack the African people. How do you explain these kind of contradictions, Brother Anthony?
Well, I explain it on one front, on one level. I think the fact that the U.S. has an African U.S. president has confused a lot of Africans, unfortunately, and into thinking that things are going to work in our favor. And one of the techniques of capitalism is to highlight exceptions to the rule. Though, you know, those rags to riches stories they're fond of telling. You know, people like the Obamas, the Oprah Winfreys, and a host of others, particularly in the entertainment field. People are confused because they don't realize the exceptions. The masses of people suffer tremendously under the oppression of capitalism. Now, I wholeheartedly agree with Haki's point that we need to get organized, and I think that's critical in this day and age with the direct attacks we're under. It's become obvious that no one individual can solve our problems. It's going to take us working together to do that. And being organized, and one of the aspects that's along with that is that as we get better organized, we've got to do a better job of sharing information among ourselves about what's going on. Because, someone in Newark has no idea what was happening in, say, Chicago or say, Los Angeles or New Orleans, even though they might be very similar things. But because we have not created that mechanism to share information with each other, we're totally dependent upon sources like the mainstream media for most of our information. And that's not going to cut it the way we're under attack right now. And the solution is Pan-Africanism. I mean, bottom line, you know, the total liberation, unification of Africa under scientific socialism. But in order to achieve that, we have to get better organized as a people.
You know, Brother Anthony, and I will address this to Brother Hackey too, in terms of your proposed resolution of Pan-Africanism, and how do we get there, I would like to raise this critical issue in terms of this question of the perception of ourselves. There seems to be, particularly among the African youth today, there's a big disconnect in terms of a sense of self-hatred, and they don't want to associate themselves with anything that views to be African. It seems like we are going backwards again. How do we create a climate where we can eradicate that again? It has came back, and it's become very difficult to talk to our people when it comes to, when we talk about unity of our people, and we talk about it from a global perspective, our people don't have the conception of seeing ourselves as one. Brother Hackey, first, and then Brother Anthony, how do we deal with that set of conditions?
Well, I think it's a mixed bag, Brother Africa. I think that it's true. We have a lot of our youth who are so totally loathe, you know, who they are in terms of their African character. And that's a function of miseducation. But more importantly, I think that we do have young brothers out there who are quite aware of who they are and quite proud of who they are and expressing to other youth who they are. The thing is, I think for us, we need institutions, you know, to sort of bring home the message in terms of who they are. And understanding who they are, then understand that, you know, when we talk about the evolution of human beings, so we talk about, you know, African people being the kings and queens of civilization. And so all of those good things that we're treated with civilization has to start in Africa. But, of course, our kids don't know that because they've been miseducated. And unfortunately, we got a new crop of young educators who also are miseducated in terms of, you know, what it is to be African. So I think what has to happen, we need institutions. This is something that brothers and sisters have been calling for a long, long time. I mean, for decades now in terms of institutions. But it's not quite a message that resonates with a lot of, in particular, you know, middle-class African people who somehow don't seem to understand. When you start getting them to understand that how people think is indicative of what they believe or how they believe, that if we don't change it with that paradigm in terms of how our kids think, then we can't expect them to do anything positive. They're only going to do that which they're programmed to do. And so we have to have these institutions in terms of redirecting the way our kids see themselves and our people. It's a struggle, but it's one that we have to wage. We're talking seriously in terms of moving forward in society. I mean, I know it's an old concept, but it's one that we've been struggling with for a long, long time.
Okay. We'd like to let our listening audience know that their phone line is open. Please call in 323-679-0841. And for our listening audience also, we can go over a little bit today. And for those who don't hear the entirety of the program, you always can go to the archive by logging in at www.blogtalkradio.com/ and just type in Africa-on-the-move. So on that note, we have another caller. We're going to take our caller, and today we basically are talking about what's going on in the neck of our woods and beyond. We like to know what's going on where you at. So we have a caller. We can call our last four numbers, 5146. I recognize the number. I believe we have Sister Katie. Sister Katie, welcome to Africa on the Move.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. I'm here.
Can you give our people an update of what's going on with the case with you and your son? We're talking about things going on around the world, around the country that people don't know about. So give us a synopsis of what's happening and what's going on right now in your world.
A few months ago, I shared with you and your listening audience that law enforcement officials came into my home and confiscated all of our computers and all of the technology which we had access to, including cell phones, cameras. And we were denied access to the information that they took. We don't know what they were looking for, but my son was not here at the time they came in. We still have not gotten the update on all of the discovery which they have charged him with. They're saying now that they're using the computer, the information that they got off of the computer, to bring charges against him in a county which we have never lived in. We've never lived in Douglas County. and these individuals who took the computer all came from Douglas County. So now we are going before the judge and trying to show the judge that my son is an innocent person in Colorado who is facing charges that he has no knowledge of. These charges are being written as felony charges to indicate that this is sexual exploitation of a child, and my son has not had access to children. And this is a very serious charge because all of their charges are based on computer images which he has not seen and had no knowledge of. And I was not aware of anything like this, to be honest with you. But now, as we are beginning to learn more, we are being told that we cannot see the evidence. We cannot see the discovery. As you know, this is not a terrorist case, and we should be able to see everything that they have. But we have also been told that other individuals probably had access to our computer and were able to come into our home and do whatever has been done. So we are fighting for my son's freedom right now. We don't know what to expect when we go back to court.
You know, Katie and Haki, Anthony, earlier we were just talking about this question of these laws, how these laws come to exist and how they are used against us. And this seemed like a perfect example in terms of the situation Sister Katie and her and her son, in terms of how they can legally create laws and hand-tie you, where you can't even defend yourself against something that you never even knew about. You know, in terms of looking at this criminal justice system, fundamentally, if you had to change two, three things at this point in time, what changes would you make, Sister Katie, Haki, and Brother Anthony, as it relates to the criminal justice system, these concepts and laws?
I would ask for the judicial system to have some common sense, to understand that if you have placed laws on the book and laws in effect that is really going to alter someone's life, you really want to examine whether or not these laws are properly implemented. Don't just put them on the book and assume that they apply or you can twist them into your assessment based on your personal vendetta. The way the law is on the book now, as far as I can see, it gives the impression that my son had access or physical contact with individuals which he has not, and they know that. They know that he has not had physical contact with anyone. But they're written in a way to give the jury or give or the reader a bogus impression.
Okay, Sister Katie, before I get Brother Haki here to respond, then we have another caller. I believe it's Brother Zabari we can go to. I want you, before we lose our audience in a few minutes, can you talk a little bit about how they can support y'all and get in contact with you for those who want to know more about the case?
If you want to learn more about our case, you can call me at 720-499-5146, or you can go and email me to saveoursons2013@gmail.com. I will give you an update, and I will also be able to share additional information with you about the case because it is heart-wrenching, and it is a very serious case. And I'm hoping that someone who's listening will understand that this case is a case that is not only misrepresented and mislabeled, but it can alter his future because he could be listed as a sex offender for the rest of his life because something he has not done.
I see our lines are really getting hot. Let me take this new caller for a second. When we come back, I think this is Sister Hattie, 3662. Sister Hattie, is that you?
Yes, sir. This is Sister Hattie.
Hey, Sister Hattie. How are you doing?
Sorry I'm late. And, I was still listening to Reverend Pinckney.
Yeah, I know. No problem. But I know that you have a story. We're really just talking about what's going on in the neck of your woods, things that's going on. I want you to briefly let me tell your story. What sort of things is happening up there where you at as it relates to African people?
Right. Well, we're in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and he's talking about on his show, as my sister there that was speaking in Colorado, people who get targeted. And I think very much like in that instance, once I began to really get involved in trying to have freedom of speech, that is what causes people to get aggravated by you in these systems that have been put here to silence those who have a brain and have a voice and understand what's going on and that will speak out in their local areas to try to change something. They don't really worry about it too much with those individuals who are not going to try to change anything. But after hearing about little baby Ashton and Sister Maggie down there in Memphis, Tennessee, I have no story, I'm sad to say. I really don't, because now I'm going after trying to help with that situation. The law enforcement can continue to follow me around, and they can continue to do whatever it is that they do. But I will be definitely trying to work on helping Sister Maggie out. I've got to do something about it. And that's just where my head is right now. Pretty much, you know, law enforcement, they, you know, harass me, stalk me, fake arrest, and just
now,
just
what is that
to,
basis of harassment? Why have they talked to you outside of, what would you speaking out against? I'm quite sure it was something, Jess.
Okay. Yes, I was actually speaking out against the fact that the Minnesota Supreme Court, as well as the county court, had given away the two little daughters of Mrs. Dorothy Dunning to the foster family. And that was just so wrong, so wrong. And the way they did it, they strung her along for several years. So that's kind of what started them getting aggravated with me.
Mm-hmm. And I think
normally,
you also...
the work that I've done in the past has been within the confines of the public school system, where I advocate for African-American children, making sure that all the children, you know, get what's expected and what they need to get rather than getting nothing from education. And we're in a climate now where within the educational system, excuse my awful language, but I call it Nazis and niggers. That's what we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
I came up with that one. I thought of it just today. So you got the white supremacists, and then you got the other people, the sellouts. That's our major problem, and it's in every system that we look at. And people will not speak up until it hits them home. And even when it hits them home, they're willing to be abused. They're willing to shut up. And I don't understand that, because it's not going to get any better. That's only going to make bad matters worse. And I look back to all those people that in the past, they died for us to have these jobs that some of us held on to for 30 years and what have you, you know, from superintendents to principals and schools, K-12 and higher ed even, and then we can't sacrifice anything to make it better for those who are coming along after us. Well,
you know, Sister Hattie, that type of thinking and type of individual is winging out. It used to be a time where all of us thought like this, but now we have a tendency to seem like we function just as individuals and function according to our own self-interest. And hopefully we can get that fighting spirit back in terms of what you have just conveyed. But we do have one other caller on here we've been holding for a while. I think we have Brother Jabari. Jabari, what's your comments on this program,
speaking.
Brother Jabari?
Well, I want to just say that the conditions that we're speaking of are very multifaceted, and I just want to talk about the educational arena for a second. The fact that recently a notable black professor, Dr. Boyce Watkins, was asked by one of his the people that visited his website, how come he doesn't teach at an HBCU? He said, given the conservative culture and the climate of HBCUs, rather than find those people that are going to be proactive and look at issues within the black community, They want to kind of fit the mainstream ideal of what America's supposed to be about. And they would deny him opportunities. So he said, well, two times he met all the qualifications, but he would deny on the basis of his opinions on certain subjects.
That is real deep. Here he got to go to a European university where you feel more freely maybe to talk about issues that's more relevant to our community, but you can't do it within the context of our so-called black institutions. That says a lot.
And Dr. Clark expressed a deep admiration for HBCUs, and he said they're among the best schools in the world, but it's just unfortunate that they're pigeonholed due to certain regulation, like since we've been discussing rules and laws, the rules are so deeply ingrained until these schools change their guidelines and their charters. It's an issue that's going to be ongoing for any student. I mean, even goes to UCLA, you find out that overwhelmingly the majority of black students there are athletes. They're not trying to produce scholars, but long as you can throw a touchdown or put the ball through the basketball hoop, they'll gladly accept you as a person of color.
You know, listen, yeah. Audience, in terms of what's going on in Nicaragua Woods, I would like to add my little 2 cent worth to this program, just to throw this out to see where everybody at. We start with Haki, we'll go to Anthony, we'll go to Katie, and we'll go down the line. Recently, there was a story in the news about one of the school systems was trying to dictate to a young African youth, a young lady, stating that she cannot wear her afro. Afro is not acceptable. Now, Brother Haki, how do you respond to something like that at this day and time? They are now telling our people, they can't be who they are. You can't wear an afro.
Yeah, so comforting
to outrageous things like that and seem like there's no consequences. So I'd like to get all y'all response to that. Sorry, Brother Haki.
Yeah, well, the level of contempt for African people is very, very clear. I don't know what they have to do to stimulate us into organizing. You know what I mean? I don't think fear is the bottom line, no matter how scared you are, it's not going to challenge the situation we find ourselves currently in. We have no other choice but to organize and deal with these issues. But this notion that somehow that you don't have a right to wear a hairstyle is indicative also that the notion that we don't have a right to think, as the sister alluded to earlier, that in fact, in a society, terrorism is perceived as people who don't think like the way you should think. In other words, they want to tell you how to think. And it's something that African people should categorically reject, this notion that we should think the way the majority thinks in a society. That's tantamount to our own destruction. It's something we have to reject.
Brother Anthony, what's your response to this issue they asked? How they have a right to wear afro?
Actually, reminding us of an observation that Kwame Ture made several years ago before he made his transition, that it was the African youth during the 50s and 60s that put an end to conformity. In other words, a lot of the social advances that have taken place inside the U.S. were due to the struggles of Africans, especially the youth. And it seems like there is an attempt to roll back the clock, so to speak, socially speaking, in terms of everything our previous generation and generations past had fought for. And the only way we're going to counter that is we have to organize and identify those of us who are willing to make sacrifices, to advance our liberation.
So, Katie, your response to the situation?
I think that when you have people in policy-making positions who really and truly have a myopic view of beauty, they are convinced that beauty is not in the eyes of the beholder, but that beauty is more European style. If you don't look like them, then you upset their comfort level. And they perceive and assess the afro, the natural afro on a child's hair, as intimidating and threatening. It's not intimidation. It's not threatening at all. It's just a choice. The young lady who's now endeavored to wear an afro, maybe 6 months, 6 years from now, may wear her hair entirely different. It should be her choice. It should not be a matter of policy, that one has to conform to the European style of beauty. And that's a mistake. That's definitely a mistake. It has a lot to do with what we call colorism. Years ago, the only blacks that were allowed in college were light-skinned blacks. And many of the athletes in college, many of the leaders, if they were male, they married very light-skinned females. So it has to do with the comfort level of society. They think that if you look more like them or look more like white, then you're easily acceptable. And that's unfortunate. That's truly unfortunate. We have got to train our eyes, our heart, and our head to see past the skin color and see past the hairstyle. If you don't have character, wisdom, intellect, and knowledge, you're still not beautiful at all.
Sister Hattie, what's your take on it? You see that, Sister Hattie? I think we lost Sister Hattie for a second. Brother Zimbabwe, we ended with you on this thought. What's your thought on that?
I do not find this surprising because recently, within the last 3 or 4 years, there's an HBCU that made a policy at its business school that certain hairstyles that are predominantly worn by people of color would not be allowed. And just to speak to what the other caller was saying about that conformity, it's trying to create a certain mindset in regards to if you want to get ahead in society, you have to be part of what I consider to be the mainstream ideals, and we know that those mainstream ideals are contrary to what people of color need, but nonetheless, it's this whole idea of you can't be different, but you're forced to assimilate in order to make it.
You know, to my listening audience and my participants today, there seems to be an overall plan in which it suggests that based upon the technological development that this society has made, and the lack of need of not needing label, physical label, there's a lot of some of certain types of people that there is assimilable. And they look like it to me that they are now defining who they no longer want to exist in this present day world. And they are going at people who they consider as poor, who they consider as not educated, who they consider don't look like them. So there seems to be the bottom line of war against people of color, African people in particular. And all these different forms of acts are just no more than just playing that. If this is the reality of what we're living in, what kind of future do we have if we don't change the trend, and what needs to be done? I just throw it out to y'all. Anybody like to respond, can do that.
I think go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, brother. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's see. I think the key is how we're gonna respond to what's being done to us. But we can't react. We gotta proactively intensify our level of organization. And we got to realize it's very complicated because there are certain Africans that are working against us, mainly the African bourgeoisie and petty bourgeoisie for the most part, and they've elected to align their interests with the imperialist ruling class. And so our fight is, cuts across ethnic lines in a sense, and it's key to realize that we're involved in a life and death struggle, literally, against the forces of imperialism. The workers have to find a way to unite, and we got to realize our commonalities and make those primary over the differences. And unfortunately, since their desegregation, let's see, there has been an there's been an effort at trying to control us culturally or ideologically, if you will. And so we need to build institutions in order to counteract that.
Okay, Brother Hackey, take a stand with that.
Well, I think that, you know, that's the point I've been trying to bring home, is that the precarious nature about surviving society. And it starts with understanding the role of the economy. And we're talking about a global system. And so, therefore, clearly there is less need for a lot of workers. There's, you know, so as far as they're concerned, that the preponderance of people simply undermines their ability to make profit. And so, therefore, the question for them is, how do you get rid of a large number of people you don't need? And chief among those large number of people that we're talking about, we're talking about African people in society. It doesn't matter if you're wealthy or if you're poor. The bottom line is that as far as the elite is concerned, as far as the needs of global capitalist system is concerned, is that you got to eliminate people by any means necessary. And so the easy way to eliminate people is, of course, by visually people that you actually see who are perceived as different than yourself. And so therefore, we become an easy target in terms of for elimination. And so we don't have any choice but to organize and stand up. And I'm confident that, you know, as more and more atrocities happen, particularly to those who possess wealth, I think gradually our people begin to understand that this is very, very life and death kind of stuff that we're talking about. So I think it's going to take up, it's going to be a projected struggle, but I think it's one that at some point we're going to realize the seriousness of.
Okay, Sister Katie, I'll let you make the last statement and also remind the people again how they can get in touch with you and find out more about your son. You got about 2.5 minutes.
I think it's really important that we do not allow individuals or institutions to shape our self-esteem. Our self-esteem must be healthy enough so that you enjoy how you look and interact among society. If you're not happy in your own skin, if you're not happy with how you look, and your self-esteem is so poor and so fragile, they will shape you into what they want you to be. And if you don't conform and comply, then you become isolated. And if you become isolated, then, of course, you are a threat to yourself and others. So I think it really and truly does start within you. And if you're fortunate enough to have people around you who give you an image of yourself that is healthy, and that is positive, and you can build on that, then you don't become just a piece of clay in someone's hand to mold you into their image.
Okay, in closing, quickly, Sister Katie, how can people again get in touch with you who would like to know more about what's going on with your son, and how can they support you? And then I'll be closing out.
Please, if you are interested in knowing more, give us a call at 720-499-5146. You can also reach us at 720-221-8500. Or you can email me, saveoursons2013@gmail.com. If you are interested in helping support his defense, send us a donation, Post Office Box 58, Englewood, Colorado, 80151. Attention, Save Our Sons Defense Fund, INC, which is a tax-exempt organization that we are hoping to use to at least give this young man an opportunity for his freedom against these bogus charges based on a computer image. Thank you very much.
Okay, to our listening audience, to our panelists, Brother Aki, Brother Anthony, Sister Katie, Sister Haiti, and our participant, Brother Jabari, we'd like to thank all y'all for giving us the opportunity to come to your homes this evening and to share with us what's going on in Nicker Valley Woods and beyond. We say this program will basically gear towards to try to properly inform our people what is going on in our various communities. This was our attempt to do that today, and we hope that we have done a job well enough that it would motivate you to realize, as all our panelists would agree, that without organization, you know, it's very difficult to do anything. So we must be organized, and on behalf of Africa on the Move, We encourage you to join some organization that's doing something for your people, if not to create one, because organization is the weapon of the press. And the first thing we need to do in terms of when we talk about organization, we need to provide our people information so they can properly think. Until next time, we thank you for watching Africa on the Move.